Hello and welcome to Pete's Percussion Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Zambito. Thank you for listening. Today is episode 45, and it's a special interview. If you've been listening to the show for a while, by the way, if you have, thank you for doing so. I have mentioned the National Conference on Percussion Pedagogy, or NCPP, quite frequently. There's many reasons for this, but the primary one is that at NCPP, I have met and gotten to know many of my podcast guests well at this very event, as well as learned and developed my abilities as a teacher and performer. And I thought it would be great to have the current co-directors, Lisa Rogers from Texas Tech and Lance Draghi from the University of Oklahoma, to discuss the beginnings, history, and future of the conference that all three of us have been involved in from the get-go. We did this three-way interview over Skype on June 22nd, 2017, and it begins right now.
We'll start with what is the plan going forward with how you, both of you, are presenting NCPP as an organization?
Lisa, you want to take that?
Lance, you want to take that? I mean, I can tell you from my standpoint that I think we had a good year. We had a good conference this year. Lance and I both have hosted, you know, the conference. So we knew, and we've been on the board for a long time, but It was certainly a learning curve a little bit for, I can say for me, mm-hmm. I won't speak for Lance, and but I thought things went really quite well. We learned a lot from that. I think because we had such a successful conference in many ways that Lance and I have talked recently about, you know, even moving it forward a little bit more for the future to keep perpetuating the conference, to keep it going, which means some infrastructure of, you know, possibly operating procedures for the board, kind of a bylaws, if you will, also a host manual so that this can go multiple places and there be something in place to really help a host get going with that, you know, because we helped Chow, but, you know, it would be great if that's kind of more written down and passed along to keep it going, because I think there is a great interest in the conference continuing, and especially when we saw so many students, I think, that came, graduate mainly, but a lot of undergraduate too. Mm-hmm. I think that's very important that we kind of now set some parameters with that to keep it going.
But yeah, this year was, as Lisa pointed out, a very successful year. We had probably the highest turnout overall that we've had in many years.
Okay.
And a larger contribution to that was, you know, we had 22 students register and attended. Meant, you know, undergraduate and many, many graduate students.
Yeah.
And that really, I think, says a lot to us about the interest of this from that standpoint. And I think part of that was due to the a little bit better online presence, as you might say, social media presence of this this year. I don't think we've utilized that as much in the past. Registrations, you know, being able to facilitate that online for the first time this year, I think helped a lot.
Yeah.
And then just having, you know, when Dr. McLaren stepped down at the end of last year's conference in San Antonio and said that he was going to stay on the board, but not serve as the director, as he has since he started this in 2000. Mm-hmm. We did, you know, think about where is the future for this conference and how do we want to proceed with Lisa and I being the co-directors. And one of the first things we did was we kind of added a couple new board members. some newer, younger in their career board members. So that would be Josh Knight and Josh Armstrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, surprisingly, Josh Armstrong being kind of in charge of the website presence and Josh Knight being in charge of the student recital this year.
Okay.
And probably one of the largest turnouts ever of students, you know, sending in, you know, to perform on that, probably contributed a lot to the success of this year's conference. And that's very going in a very positive direction. So that kind of goes back to what you first asked is, you know, where is the direction of this going as we see it now? We will continue to have the conference at the University of Arkansas next year for one more year. Okay. That's been kind of our trend is to go someplace and do it for 2 years. And based on all the factors that were involved for this year's successful conference, we felt that that would certainly be in the best interest of NCPP to go back to University of Arkansas and have it there one more year. So that's where it will be for 2018, May 20th through the 22nd.
Excellent. Talked a little bit, either one could go first, about your when you were asked to be part of the executive board for this conference and how it came about.
I think, gosh, it's hard to remember, but I think Court asked me, he might have even asked me at a PAS convention or something like that, if I would be interested in being a part of that. And I said yes. And, you know, it's funny when Lance just said, you know, we decided to bring on some young people onto the board. We were those young people.
Right.
So it is true. It, you know, it's... We felt definitely going, you know, adding some younger folks. We're the old folks now. So I think that was Court's intent. I'm not even sure. I think I don't really remember, but I think he just asked in person. I don't remember, Lance. Do you remember what he did for you?
He asked in person as well. Yeah. And then I think afterwards he might have sent maybe a more formal letter kind of outlining the what the board of advisors role was going to be, and which was mainly, I think for him, he sought advisement from the board in many of his dealings with how to handle the conference and the sessions, and he really, you know, utilized the board in that way. I think especially well to just sort of give him input on. Ideas that he was having, direction, and so that's what we did for many years. Lisa, were you one of the original board members as well?
Yes, I think you and I, and I think Laura Franklin as well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, we were kind of the contingent of youngsters, so to speak, and the other folks were older in their careers. That's for sure. So, yeah.
Lance, were you an original member?
I was.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Excellent. One of the things you did in this particular conference that was different was you had these lightning sessions that opened up with essentially a group of presenters trying to sell their topic to, you know, almost like a Shark Tank kind of thing, to the rest of the members of the conference, and you then got to choose which session you wanted to go to for the last like 45 minutes or so. Who came up with that idea, and how did it come about?
Well, you know, we had talked, I don't remember what conference it was, but I was charged to kind of head up a session that would be kind of like a poster session, research poster session. And, but, you know, poster sessions are well done in the music ed world.
Right.
For people that are getting DMA, he's in percussion, and it just is a little foreign to us how to do a poster. And I know we've kind of set that up for a previous conference as a poster session. And basically it worked that way. People had their research available, kind of an abstract. And I remember putting together a poster and having to carry that thing on an airplane. And I mean, you know, and, but it was nice because people walked around and visited just like they do in many, poster sessions, music ed poster sessions. So in the time that was allotted. And so really it was Joe Shively who is, you know, in the music education world. And I said, you know, I would love to do that again because it gives a lot of opportunities to different folks, professional students, to present. And I found when we did it before, it was really just really neat. You got to visit and it spurred ideas for anybody attending. And so Joe brought up the fact that this is kind of a new thing in the music ed world. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily presenting research, but, you know, a concept, an idea, yeah, you will. And, you know, you have 5 minutes to present that idea or concept. And then you go, you know, there are a lot of ways to do this after all the presenters do their thing, for everybody then to visit with them or go around, whether it be in separate locations or different, you know, kind of table areas or anyway, so we decided to try it because I thought, you know, this would be great. It would allow students to get more involved as well as professionals, but not necessarily their DMA research. I mean, our charge in the college world is to continue researching, obviously scholarly and creatively, and so just another opportunity to do that. And I think for the first time out, it was pretty successful. We've got some things that, you know, that Joe and I want to talk about to kind of maybe change a little bit, but it was successful. And then we had wanted to also provide opportunity for research presentations as well, more traditional. But what happened is the submissions we got were more kind of like how-to sort of things. They weren't true research proposals. So we still want to provide that opportunity for especially DMA students that are about to graduate or PhD students, that ability to present their research in longer sort of sessions. But so hopefully we can do that again next year too.
Okay. Anything to add on that, Lance?
No, I think Lisa was sort of, she and Joe were sort of the ones that were spearheading that session, and I thought it was extremely successful, and it did remind me of that poster session that we had many years ago when it was at UNCG, and I still remember the going around, you know, at that time as well and doing that, and this kind of was that similar type of thing, but kind of with a new modern twist. But I was going to kind of throw that back to you, Pete. You've been to, you know, every single one of these since 2000.
Yep.
How did you feel about how that went from a participant standpoint?
I thought it went really well because it gave everyone a chance to lay out their project and everyone and all of the participants could then go to one of the things and then they could sit in for a little bit and then they could travel to something else. I'm always a fan of having some options. Mm-hmm. And I think there have been some times when the conference hasn't had those kinds of options. I mean, there'll be typically it's been with breakout groups,
right?
You know, like the small program, medium program, large program stuff, which I think is helpful. But I like when there's – then it's more a little bit more like PASIC in just in that you can just hop from one thing to another. You can get something out of it. Maybe you have a question you can have answered. And then you can just go pick up the sheet, move on to the next thing. And I think that that worked out really nicely. I thought it was a nice change of pace. Yeah. So
it is. It's difficult sometimes to kind of get that right balance with everything. Every year we ask for feedback on the conference and through a survey format, and we as the board, and certainly now Lisa and I as the co-directors, look at those comments very closely, and we kind of talk through all of them. Some people would like to see the more sessions kind of having some sessions overlap.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, kind of more like a PASIC. Up to this point, we've always kind of really felt like we like the idea of everybody participating in each of the sessions and having that dialogue. It's a much more participant-driven conference than many others. And so we feel that that's important. And it's not just coming and going to a session and then hearing somebody talk to you for 45, 50 minutes. Every session, in many ways, is everybody in that room, as you know, is participating and sharing their thoughts on certain topics. So it is a balance. But I think this year, and especially with these types of sessions, really kind of met that in the middle ground a little bit, which was, like you said, it gave you some options, but yet you still got to go into these smaller areas and small sessions and communicate as a small group. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those stayed on topic with what was being discussed. And sometimes even within, I noticed that they kind of shifted a little bit or morphed into something maybe slightly different just because of who might have was in that room and was bringing up certain things. So it was kind of the best of all worlds. Wouldn't you say, Lisa?
Yeah, I that's what I liked about it is we certainly do have sessions that, again, are everybody participating or not, more kind of lecture and then time for questions, and then also with these lightning talks options. And I think for some people, especially students, sometimes they don't feel very comfortable in asking questions or participating, even when it's a more participatory session, because they just feel uncomfortable. And I know for me, that would have been me as that student. Mm-hmm. So I would have enjoyed going and asking questions in a more intimate setting, and I would have felt more comfortable in that. So I think our goal is to provide some different options within the whole conference where everybody feels comfortable in participating and learn in different ways. So that, I think, has been what we've tried to do is balance, as Lance said. Mm-hmm.
What have been some of the challenges through the years of the conference? And I'm thinking of, PASIC. There's a college pedagogy part of that conference, of that organization within PAS, issues of numbers for the conference, those types of things. What are some of the discussions that within the board that happen on these lines? Lance, we'll start with you.
So in terms of numbers of conference, I'm thinking back to when we had the first one back in 2000, and I remember Court kind of mentioning that the conference was sort of designed to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 participants, large enough to where you could all be in one room sitting around, and he very purposely at that very first conference set up the at that time it was the band room at UNCG, but with tables so that everybody was sitting around in a square, and looking at each other. And at that time, everybody was pretty much on the first row. We've kind of grown a little bit to where now we have one row of tables and then a set of chairs behind that even. So there's a second row. But that first, you know, number of years, it was everybody was right there at the front of the table. The dialogue was, you know, incredible between just asking questions from one another and situations that you may have at your place where you are currently working and how some other people might have similar issues that they can respond on and respond to, I should say. And so it was never really thought of at that point to grow into something huge. It was always sort of designed to be in the size that would allow that to happen. And I think we've done a pretty good job of maintaining that, even though this year was a little bit larger with certainly more students. We still have that same kind of feel where everybody can come in and Chal did that again this year, set up everything so that we were all in kind of a big square set up in the main band room there. So I think that's from a size standpoint, that's what the board has always been, has always discussed and would like to make sure that that would continue. Yes, PASIC and PAS has a percussion, you know, a pedagogy committee as well. But I think serves a probably a different purpose, whereas this conference I think has some different goals and different things in mind that you know allows for people to come in and participate and discuss that you may not get in any other type of conference or any other organization.
Yeah, I would agree with Lance. I mean, I think that the pedagogy conference gives you a little bit more time to discuss things. There's not a huge performance component to this. And I think that's what Court really and some of the early board members, Richard Gibson, really felt that there needed to be more concentrated time to talk about teaching and literature and you name it. So this just allows a little bit more concentration on that. Doesn't take away from really PAS and the convention there, because that does a broader swath of performance and, you know, just everything. So this is just more concentrated in terms of pedagogy.
Before this started, and I know this was Court's idea, but before this conference started, and this is, I'm thinking back to before I was active in PAS actually, did it feel like there was any type of groundswell for something like this, or did it kind of appear because Court like really wanted to do it? I'm talking about within PAS itself or the within your friendships there.
I think that it, I think from what I remember from talking to Court and talking to Richard Gibson, that basically you would hear people at a pedagogy session at PASIC go, man, I wish we had more time. That was really the impetus, I think, which meant more time to ask questions, and the session was longer, we could do some more things. And so I think that was, because I used to go to those sessions, and, you know, I remember sitting with Laura Franklin and Randy Fluman, who's come to many of our conferences and presented. I remember sitting in at a PASIC and sitting in a pedagogy session that was about burnout. And we all three came away with, gosh, I wish we had more time and had more time to talk about questions and those sorts of things. And so, you know, I think it was last year, Randy and I worked on the burnout and things that we found. And so we were able to do it in a longer period of time and be able to talk with one another about that. And so I think that's really what struck Court in some of the early founders and members is that that would come to the conferences all the time is, wow, this is great because you can talk more and everybody is a participant, so to speak, you know, too. And so you had time to do that a little bit more in our conferences. So I think that was the impetus that people would walk away from a PAS pedagogy session and go, great, loved it, but man, wish we could talk more, wish we could expand on that, you know.
Excellent.
Yeah, that was my sense as well. I remember going to several PASIC conferences in the late 80s and 90s, and sort of as what Lisa just said, people, you know, went to these sessions, especially those that were more focused on pedagogy or attracted to university faculty and or topics that were, you know, related to university pedagogy, and just saying, man, what would it be like if we had you know, several days of just focusing on this? And I could be maybe slightly wrong on this, but I do remember that you know, Court and Richard Gibson were close, and especially in how they approached teaching percussion and percussion pedagogy, and sort of talked a lot about what ifs when they were at these conferences. And this may have been, I think, at the time around, you know, in the 90s and certainly around 2000, Richard was very much involved with administrative aspects, and he was going to conferences. One of them was called NAMESU, which is a conference where one school from each state. Lisa, do you know which school it is? I guess it's, I don't know how it's pick, but at least one school is in each state is represented at this conference, and all 50 of these music school directors and or deans sit around in a room. Uh-huh. And I think that might have been something where Richard and Court were talking, and Richard might have said, well, you know, why don't you do something like this? And I think after several years of discussing it, Court said, you know what, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to put together a board and ask for some advice. And then all of a sudden, you know, after a couple of years of talking about it, he said, we're going to do it. And that's kind of maybe how it started.
Right. At what point did the conferences used to be held in March, essentially around
spring break.
At what point was it suggested and or made clear that this is not a viable option and we should try for when the semester's over?
Yeah. We had it for the first several years, as you know, Pete, at UNCG, and it was right around the first weekend of the spring break there.
Yeah.
So the facilities were available, and students weren't there, and it seemed to make sense from that standpoint. But I think, again, from surveys and feedback from the participants, it was, you know, maybe very a good time from the university standpoint as far as their facilities being available. But it wasn't always the best time for people whose spring break don't line up at the same time, which is, of course, the case for many places. So I think at one point we skipped a year, and then it came back and we did it starting in May. Mm. Kind of at the end of everybody's school year, with the whole idea that, you know, you come in and right before your summer break starts, and your mind is still engaged with what you had just done that semester and that year.
Well, at least partially engaged. Let's not get fully engaged there.
And so that seemed to make it, from the standpoint of the participants, you know, a little bit better. It also may have also been some discussions, and I don't remember this exactly, but there may have been some discussions about the availability of people who are teaching in public schools, mm-hmm. their availability during that time versus during a May.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because I know that that was a push for the first bunch of conferences was, can we get more band directors? Can we get more high school people. So I just talk a little bit about that. And it seems like we've kind of, if we get them, that's great, but it doesn't sound like we've changed the focus. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think so. The original was to involve, you know, all facets of music educators, whether they teach elementary music, whether they teach band, instrumental, basically, and percussion. No, not really an emphasis, I don't think, on choral or sure. vocal music, but and to have a dialogue about the state of percussion as it is in a band hall, as it is in an elementary music classroom, all those things. And we worked hard to try to push that, but sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, meaning the timing of when the conference is, whether it's March or whether it's May. I know for me, when I hosted it at Tech, I was able, especially the first year, to involve some of our local music educators, either through a clinic demonstration of what they're doing and try to dialogue more. And I think that's been what we've been able to do wherever the convention is or the conference is. We've been able to grab some of these local folks and in the hope that they would attend, enjoy, and maybe come back the second year if we've hosted the conference the second year there, or continue to come. And, at least I feel really good about the fact that we're trying to embrace wherever we hold the conference and include the dialogue with those folks there. It's just a very difficult time in May because now, at least here in Texas, schools are going up till June, and so it's very difficult to do that.
Yeah, and I'm looking back here at the purpose statement that NCPP has, and from the very beginning, it was outlined that the conference is to provide a forum for elementary, secondary music educators, university percussion faculty, professional percussionists. So we tried to open it up to everybody, and some years maybe the conference theme or focus might have a few more sessions sort of geared toward that, whether it be private studios or percussion faculty or teachers in high school situations. But every place that's hosted it has sort of had a little bit of some sessions or focus on performance with high school faculty, high school performers.
Right.
But all the way back to Greensboro, UNCG, we had Lenore Ryan.
Yep.
And yeah, Rick
Klein. Yep.
And wow, did that group just kind of knock everybody out when they played. And then we had at OU, we brought in Keith Larson and his program up in Kansas City. And we also brought in Rick Minotti and his program up in Pittsburgh. And that, again, just, knocked everybody out. Lisa, you had...
I had a couple of local high schools, like Coronado High School here in Lubbock, Texas, and also Friendship Middle School in Wolfert, Texas, which is right kind of next door to us. And so it was really nice. And Evans Middle School, I think, it was nice to get those teachers, those groups of kids. And it's always nice to kind of embrace that as well, as much as we can.
Yeah. Wait, if you said next door, is that, 2 hours away or 3 hours away?
It's about 15 minutes.
Oh, all right. I didn't know that was the case. I didn't know that was available near Lubbock.
Yep.
So, it does also go to a little bit of where the conference is going to be hosted. And the board does try to, look at all options that we can do. And certainly you know, some years we've tried to actually go with a very a whole theme for the whole conference, and sometimes that's been more successful than others. So it just kind of varies from year to year. I think next year at Arkansas, there might be some, you know, more of a, we might see more, a shift a little bit to some more high school performances and maybe some sessions geared towards that, as long as that coincides with some of those kind of performances as well.
Great. The last thing is just if there's any important dates, places where they can find the information, anything, other things you want to announce or say about the conference to conclude this segment, go ahead.
Well, we know that the conference will be at University of Arkansas, hosted by Chal Ragsdale again. Dates will be May 18th through the 20th. It's a Sunday afternoon through Tuesday afternoon. And as we did this past year, again, based on survey information and things like that we got from participants, is that the sooner we can get the sessions identified and put up on our website, that helps people with their ability to see if that's going to be a work, work for them to be able to come and participate. And I know that Lisa and I are working on trying to get a lot of that so that we can have that up on our website in early fall here in a couple months. We had a very good board post session this last year, and based on a lot of the input from the surveys, already kind of have a template, I believe, kind of outlined for next year's sessions, I believe. Is that correct, Lisa?
Yeah, we do. And also, just Lance, I want to correct one thing, I believe. The dates for next year are May 20th through 22nd, correct? Not 18th.
Was that this year?
No,
we this were... year, this year was the 21st through the 23rd.
Yes.
Oh.
I think you're thinking since it's 2018, but it's May 20th through the 22nd.
Thank you.
Also, I would say that that we have a great Facebook presence, or, you know, we try to update that a lot. We'll be adding these dates, and I still will add some pictures and some other things. We also have our website, percussionpedagogy.org. And we're about to also embark on that website of putting up some of the handouts and things from the sessions 2017, from some of the lightning talks, so people can go and really look at some other information and grab that information if they weren't able to come, but hopefully encourage them to come again, or if somebody's new, they can check that out as well on our website.
Excellent. Okay. I think this is if there's nothing else, is there anything else anybody wants to say on this?
Well, we're also, you know, been in discussion with trying to see how we can up our social media game, looking at ways that can happen, and or, you know, people who are fairly good at that area of social media that could assist with NCPP and not just the website presence, but also just presence on the whole social media standpoint. So, you know, we'll be talking to various people.
They're looking at me. This is an audio podcast. They're giving me some strange looks like, that guy.
That's right, sir. Exactly. Because I can do Facebook. We can do a website, but I'm not much of a Twitter person or Snapchat or Instagram.
Sure.
But just ways that can not only help prior to the conference and getting information out, but also could be ways that we could probably instigate or institute something during the conference that, you know, sure, could be a very interesting way. I mean, that's as evident by my ability to take 15 minutes to log on to Skype this morning. I'm probably not that person, of course.
here. To be fair, though, Skype does that to everybody.
So. Oh, man. That's great. Well, thank you, Pete, for allowing us to be on your podcast and talk about this, too, because we appreciate it.
Thanks again to Lisa and Lance for their time and efforts in making the conference successful. And I also thank them for their patience as I tried to figure out how to do a conference call on Skype. Success! In lieu of a related slash non-related rave this week, as usual, I will make this pitch to those of you who listen to the show who are involved in percussion education in some way, shape, or form. Come to NCPP and make it a habit. Here's my pitch. I've never gone to this conference and not learned a ton, and I've always had a great time doing so. I've gone to this conference some years when I felt so burned out at the end of the spring semester that the very last thing I wanted to do was go to a percussion conference. And, I kid you not, those years have frequently been the best and most restorative years for me personally and professionally. So mark your calendars for May 20th through 22nd, 2018, and make your way to beautiful and scenic Fayetteville, Arkansas. You won't be disappointed. And that's today's show. You can find the podcast on iTunes, where you can leave a comment and a rating. You can always find the show notes at the homepage at PeteZambito.com/Pete's Percussion Podcast, the episodes. The show is also found on SoundCloud and Stitcher. If you're on Facebook, like the page Pete's Percussion Podcast, where you can find updates and get in touch with me. You can also email me at petesperkpod@gmail.com. I'll catch you next time for one of my usual one-on-one interviews, this time with Texas Tech's Lisa Rogers. Until then.